content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired or print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with some articles from AARP, the magazine. And we're starting with one, A Caregiving Journey. In her new book, and in an exclusive interview with us, Emma Heming Willis talks frankly about coping with the dementia of her husband, actor Bruce Willis. And this is entitled, A Conversation with Emma Heming Willis. Emma Heming Willis, 47, was thrust into a caregiving role unexpectedly a couple of years ago when the behavior of her husband, actor Bruce Willis, 70, began to change. First, almost imperceptibly, then dramatically. Changes that were later attributed to frontotemporal dementia, FTD. Since then, she's had to navigate the challenging path from loving wife to Bruce's chief advocate and caregiver, supported by the whole Willis clan, including Bruce's three adult daughters with ex-wife Demi Moore, Rumor, 37, Scott, 34, and Tallulah, 31, and the two young daughters he shares with Heming Willis, Mabel, 13, and Evelyn, 11. Willis acknowledges that the experience is easier for her than it is for many. She can well afford caregiving assistance, for one. I fully recognize the privilege of my position, she writes in her new book, The Unexpected Journey, excerpted on page 66, and we'll also read that. But caregiving is caregiving. Whether you have support or not, the emotional toll remains. She spoke with us about the ways her family has adapted, how she handles her darker days, and what she's learned during this difficult time that might help others new to caregiving. What made you decide to share the details of your journey? I realized that there was such a lack of support out there. When we received our FTD diagnosis, we left that appointment without any clear direction. There was no information, just a check back in a few months, and that was it. It was a horrible and traumatic time. But since then, I've been able to assemble all of these experts and specialists around our family and all of this valuable information. I want my book to be a map for people navigating this unexpected road. Question: why do you prefer the term care partner to caregiver? I learned this term from Tipa Snow, a dementia care specialist and an expert I included in my book. She was always calling me a care partner, and I loved that. Caregiver just seemed to sort of separate me from my husband. What were the first signs that something might be wrong or different with Bruce? There are different variants of FTD that affect different things like behavior, movement, or speech. Bruce was diagnosed with PPA, which is primary progressive aphasia, and affects a person's ability to communicate. So for him, it started to show up through language. As a younger person, he had a severe stutter, and I started noticing that stutter coming back and other behavior changes. But never in my wildest dreams did I think that these were early signs of young onset dementia. Can you share how Bruce is doing now? It's such a loaded question. What I can say is that FTD is a really unkind form of dementia. They all are, right? There's no kind version of dementia. But FTD is one that I know. There is no treatment. There is no cure. So he's doing the best he can do, given the circumstances of this terrible disease. Your book includes some of the caregiving tips you've received from experts. What advice has helped you most? A neurologist said to me, you're burning your candle at both ends, and you need to understand that sometimes, due to the stress of caregiving, the caregiver dies before the person they are caring for. That was a wake-up call. We have young kids, and I didn't want them to lose two parents. So I started to make a conscious effort to find time in my day to care for myself and understand that it's not selfish. It's self-preserving. And if we don't care for ourselves, then how can we properly tend to the person that we're caring for? How have you found support? I thought I was the only one who could care for Bruce. I didn't want to be a burden to anyone. What I realized was that it's okay to ask for help. Sometimes it was helping take care of our young children. When Bruce was diagnosed, our two girls were 8 and 10. So I was able to rally friends, family, or parents of my kids' friends to help with pickup or activities for them. It's also important for caregivers to connect to their community. For me, there's the Association for Frontal Temporal Degeneration, which has support groups where you can talk openly and no one will judge you. It's been helpful to normalize some of these feelings I thought were just happening to me. I didn't realize that other people felt guilt, shame, anger. Being isolated is a killer. What would you say to someone new to dementia caregiving, as you were a few years ago? You receive this diagnosis and feel like your whole world has rocked, but you will find your footing. Your world will look different. It will feel different, but you will be okay in time. I didn't know that was possible. I felt hopeless, but I feel a lot more hopeful, and I have a lot more gratitude than I ever did. What is the best way for friends and family members to offer support to caregivers? I always suggest that when someone says, "Let me know if there's anything I can do," instead of just saying, "No, it's fine, I've got this," be proactive and make a list of things that you do throughout the day. Then you could say to the person, "Here is something that would be helpful," whether it's starting a meal train, going to the grocery store, picking up prescriptions, or coming to sit with your person for a couple of hours while the care partner attends to their needs. That was a game changer for me, understanding that it was okay to ask for help. Why did you decide to move Bruce to his own house near your family home? I am afraid of being judged about that, but you have to do what's right for your family. I want to go back to my old life with my husband and my kids, but unfortunately, that's not in the cards for us. So we have had to pivot and make really hard decisions. Those decisions were first driven by thinking, what would Bruce want me to do? And I know that he would want our children to be in a home that was about their needs, not about his needs. So they're able to have play dates and sleepovers and be in a place that's fun and loud and full of energy. The setup we have now works beautifully. It was a hard decision, but the right one for our family. You write about feeling ambiguous loss. Can you explain that? For me, it's like you're grieving for someone who's still alive, which just feels odd. As you're walking through dementia with someone, slowly things start to be taken away from them. That's what FTD does. It just takes and it takes. And when you think it can't take any more, it takes again. So you're constantly in this state of grief. But as hard as ambiguous loss is, I am so grateful that we still have him. We have the gift of time with him, and I'll take it, no matter what. How are your daughters doing? They're doing really well, all things considered. I love how they just meet Bruce where he's at. There's something really beautiful to see how they have adapted to his world. What brings you joy during this difficult time? I find joy in nature. I love being outdoors. I love being in my garden, planting something, tending to it, watering it, seeing it grow. That makes me really happy. I love being with our daughters. They're so fun. And I find joy with my husband. It's not all sadness. That's always there, but I also make room for the cracks of light that come in. I needed to be able to find that balance because I didn't want our daughter's world to be clouded by FTD. It didn't happen overnight. In those early years, I was too much on the dark side, and I made a conscious effort to open our world up for the sake of our daughters, for the sake of myself, and for the sake of Bruce. Is there anything in particular you want Bruce fans to know? I did a social media post for his 70th birthday in March, and I said, just send him a prayer. Bring him all the light and all that healing love. And I know this sounds super woo-woo, but I know that the energy his fans bring to him lifts things up. I'm so grateful for them. I'm so grateful for their love and their kindness and their compassion. It's been really meaningful and really beautiful. In the final analysis, what do you hope to achieve with your advocacy and with your new book? I'm trying to raise as much awareness as possible about FTD. I don't feel comfortable with public speaking, but I need to get out of my shyness and raise my voice so we can get people to a diagnosis earlier. What I love about the book is that you can open it up, read a paragraph, and take something away from it. And I've been encouraging neurologists to understand that they need to support the caregiver, even to give them one sheet of paper with just a couple of contacts and some information. Or I hope this book will be in their office and they can say, we're so sorry that you've received this diagnosis, but here is something that will help you. That's my whole reason for writing it. And this interview was by Christina Ionzito. Now, we have a couple of sidebar articles with this, and then we have an excerpt from the book. So let's start with By the Numbers, Caregiving in America Today. Bruce and Emma Willis's caregiving journey is just one of many that begin each year. A new report, Caregiving in the U.S. 2025, by AARP and the National Alliance for Caregiving, provides a comprehensive look at the state of caregiving in America. Here we break it down by the numbers. 63 million American adults provide care to adults or children with a medical condition or disability. 51 is the average age of a caregiver. 61% of caregivers are women. 40% of caregivers live with their care recipient. The most common main condition requiring care is, quote, old age or aging, 13%, followed by Alzheimer's or other dementias at 11%. 29% are sandwich generation caregivers caring for children or grandchildren under 18 living at home while also caring for an adult family member or friend. Nearly 30% of caregivers have provided care for 5 years or more. 24% of caregivers provide 40 or more hours of care each week, equivalent to a full-time job. 55% of caregivers take on medical or nursing tasks, like administering injections and managing catheters. 38% of caregivers report they have experienced high emotional stress. 70% of working-age caregivers are employed while also providing care. 23% find it difficult to care for their own health, and 20% of caregivers rate their health as fair or poor. Another sidebar article, Which Dementia is Which? A Guide to the 5 Most Common Dementias. Alzheimer's disease. The most common form, affecting some 7.2 million Americans. It typically begins with memory loss in the mid-60s or later and is linked to abnormal protein buildups that disrupt brain cell communication. Next is Lewy body dementia. That's L-E-W-Y. Includes dementia with Lewy bodies, DLB, and Parkinson's disease dementia, PDD. Both involve abnormal deposits of alpha-synuclein Lewy bodies in the brain, affecting movement, thinking, mood, and behavior. Next is vascular dementia. It accounts for 5 to 10% of dementia cases and results from strokes or impaired blood flow to the brain. Risk factors include high blood pressure, heart issues, diabetes, and high cholesterol. Symptoms vary. Then there's frontotemporal dementia, FTD. Usually affects adults age 45 to 64. One type affects the brain's frontal lobes, resulting in changes in social conduct. The other, which Bruce Willis has, affects temporal lobes and impairs understanding and use of language. And finally, we have mixed dementia, involves symptoms from more than one dementia type, such as Alzheimer's combined with vascular dementia. While it's unclear how many older adults have mixed dementia, it may be more common than is realized. Now I'm going to read you an excerpt from the book. "That wasn't the Bruce I knew. The husband I adored remained oddly quiet. I decided it was time to talk to a doctor." And this is adapted from her new book, The Unexpected Journey, by Emma Heming Willis. "When I suspected something was off with Bruce, but couldn't put my finger on what it was, I went through every possible explanation in my head. Was there a problem in our marriage? Was it Bruce's sleeping difficulties? Maybe it was his hearing loss. In the 90s, when he was filming Die Hard, there was a scene where he had to fire a gun underneath a table. When it was shot, oddly, Bruce wasn't wearing any protective earplugs or covering, and he lost a large percentage of his hearing in one ear. When we first got together, this never posed a real problem. Years later, however, I began to notice him sort of check out if we were at a dinner party or meal with the entire family. He would sit back and let everyone else do the talking without contributing much. Mind you, when we would get the family together, Bruce was usually the only man at a table full of women, with me, our two girls, and his three older daughters speaking a mile a minute and over each other with excitement. Initially, I thought he was just letting us have our girl time to yak it up, as he would say, rather than trying to get a word in. But in hindsight, that wasn't the Bruce I knew, especially when it came to connecting with his daughters. Bruce was a family man at heart. Early on in our relationship, and before we had children together, he wanted to spend as much time with his older girls as possible. If we were traveling, he was always dying to get back to them, calling the feeling a gravitational pull, which always brought him back to his girls. This was something I loved about him. Today, I understand that him checking out at the table was likely due to cognitive overload, difficulty processing conversations, which is common in primary progressive aphasia, PPA. The variant of frontal temporal dementia, FTD, that Bruce has. It was an early symptom of his disease. Many families spend years living with a lot of confusion around symptoms prior to a diagnosis. From reading to other care partners, I have learned how subtle or not so subtle symptoms of certain forms of dementia like FTD or Lewy body, for example, can rock a whole family system and destroy it. For FTD in particular, in those early years, no one suspects the diagnosis because most people have no clue what FTD is. They assume their person is being rude, apathetic, withdrawn, depressed, irritable, impulsive, reckless, or lacking empathy. An array of behaviors that seem like personal choices rather than symptoms of a disease. This shift in behavior, language, and or personality is frustrating and can ruin relationships. FTD is not your doctor's first or second thought, either. Often, FTD is misdiagnosed as a midlife crisis, depression, or bipolar disorder, to name just a few, because the symptoms can apply to these conditions. Bruce Miller, MD, the leading expert in FTD, a professor of neurology at the University of California, San Francisco, and head of the Global Brain Health Institute, explains, many of the symptoms are elusive and different for each neurodegenerative disease. It's tricky to determine that a change in language or personality is FTD or another form of dementia. Most of us think about the brain as important for memory and language, but the brain is also responsible for our social interactions, how we relate to others, and how we nurture and empathize with them. Most of us don't know this or anything else about FTD, and all you see and experience is that something is incredibly different with your loved one. Also, if you're like I was, you may feel strange bringing these things to the attention of your partner's doctor, especially if that doctor is not your doctor too. Initially, I was uneasy going over Bruce's head in that way. Something about the morality of it didn't sit well with me. If you feel that way too, consider the advice of Yolanda Pittenberg, a professor of young onset dementia at Alzheimer's Center Amsterdam in the Netherlands. If your feeling gets stronger that this behavior change is something that person can't help, you have to trust that feeling because you're actually acting to benefit your partner. Subtle changes due to dementia can go on for years, and all that time your person looks fine on the outside. Even more bewildering is that there might never be a moment when he or she expresses concern that something is wrong to you or to a doctor. There's actually a medical term for this, anosognosia. So if your person isn't raising his or her hand for help, it's easy to think that maybe everything is okay. This makes those early stages confusing, and it's FTD and other early onset dementias doctors can easily overlook again and again. It can take at least 2 to 3 years to get a diagnosis, and in that time, many people are misdiagnosed, explains Miller. This delay can be a catastrophe, as families can be completely derailed and dismantled, emotionally and financially, by the personality changes and shifts in their loved ones from their brains quietly dying. Over time, I began to suspect that the issue wasn't Bruce's hearing or a rocky patch in our marriage, and that instinct made me realize we should go to the doctor. I can't stress enough the importance of trusting your gut when you know something is wrong. Even if test results come back normal or a doctor dismisses your concerns, don't stop pushing for actions and answers. If your doctor isn't listening, find one who will. You know your person best. Keep advocating for them and for yourself. I felt some relief in finding out that Bruce had aphasia, and then later finding out that he had FTD. With those diagnoses, I finally understood that those crazy marital issues were not Bruce. Neither were those off moments and subtle shifts in his personality. They were the result of his brain being dismantled and taking part of the husband I knew and loved with it. You weren't doing any of this on purpose, I thought, as I looked over at him. You were there the whole time. Emma Heming Willis, a British model and actor, is married to and the caregiver of actor Bruce Willis. And this piece was adapted from The Unexpected Journey, Finding Strength, Hope, and Yourself on the Caregiving Path by Emma Heming Willis, published by The Open Field, an imprint of Penguin Publishing Group, a division of Penguin Random House LLC. It was copyrighted in 2025 by Emma Heming Willis. Well, folks, I'm going to spend the time that we have left this morning with some more money-saving tips. And right now, we're under the heading of personal finance. Do the same for credit cards. If you are carrying a balance, you'll pay less interest even if the two payments equal what you would have paid with one monthly payment. Paying more frequently also improves your credit score, making you eligible for cards with fewer fees and better rewards. And that refers back to paying your mortgage every 2 weeks. If you pay half your monthly mortgage biweekly, you'll end up making one extra monthly payment per year, and the extra amount is applied to the principal. So a $350,000 mortgage at 7% would be paid off in 23.7 years instead of 30. Carry cash again. In recent years, credit card companies have increased the processing fees they charge businesses, up to 3% of purchases. More and more small businesses will pass the fee on to you unless you pay cash. And research, including a 2021 study published in the Scientific Reports, has shown that people who pay with cash spend less. Consider digital banking. Online-only banks generally offer better savings account interest rates and lower or no fees compared with traditional banks. However, there's little or no customer service, and they have limited ATMs, which can make withdrawing and depositing a hassle. Use AARP calculators. AARP offers access to calculators to help you plan your finances, including creating a budget, mortgage, and credit card payoff. Figure out your net worth and more. Go to aarp.org/calculators and click on personal finance to start saving. Try a budgeting app. Nowadays, you have lots of apps to choose from. Some require active monthly input. Others will automatically allocate funds. Some are linked to your accounts. Some charge fees, and there are apps that keep track of your investments as well as your budget. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.